Welcome to another episode of Leaders Talk. My guest today is Kate McCord, VP of the Specialist Program CIS and Change Management for DHL Express.
Before I joined DHL Express, I worked for another company, I think, as you know, and I went to a conference and I saw somebody at this conference share something about how they have a respect and results culture, how they really, truly focus on their supervisors as the key to unlocking motivated people across the globe. And I was like, who are these people? I'm fascinated by the story they told. How do they solve some of those challenges that many big organizations have in spreading their culture? And I thought, gosh, they're the ones to watch.
Leaders Talk, the interview podcast portraying leaders who are committed to better leadership, better organizations, and a better world. Hosted by managing partner of Leadership Choices and co-founder of the Cosmic Foundation, Carsten Drath.
Kate comes from a learning family, a family of educators helping people grow. And this really transpires into everything she does. She was born in the great state of New York, then studied in Northern Carolina, moved over to Germany, learned German, worked as a coach, then worked in a business school that was newly founded, was there from day one, then worked for companies like Bombardier Transportation and now DHL Express. And Kate is very much about how a culture can support individuals to grow. And I think with DHL Express, she has found the perfect place for herself. And the specialist program, the Certified International Specialist Program, is about how to help people grow that have no further formal job education and how DHL provide that for people to grow and then maybe move on in their career, become a supervisor, become a manager, and all of that is supported. And that's with all her heart that she is behind that. So without further ado, let's go right into the talk with Kate McCord. A very warm welcome to Kate McCord. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Kate, we go back a while. What do you do? And more importantly, who are you?
I love these questions, Carsten. What do I do? I work for DHL Express. I work in the area of leadership development. What is it that I do? I collaborate with colleagues and partners to create experiences that help us bring our culture and our engagement forward. That's what I do. Who am I? It's a big question. I am a sister. I am a colleague. I'm a manager. I'm also a wife. I am someone who likes to move. I often say I'm a Germerican. I was born in the United States, but I've lived in Germany for a long, long time. I'm interested in moving. I like to hike and do Pilates and travel interests me a lot. So who am I? It's a big question and it's something I endeavor to find out.
And Kate, what I noticed whenever we talk about your work at DHL Express is that there must be something in the water when it comes to culture, because, mm-hmm. you know, your eyes go on sparkle mode all the time. So what is, maybe let's start first, DHL Express, can you kind of bring that to life in terms of, you know, size of the organization, how is it structured, all of that?
Yeah, sure. So for, I mean, who is DHL Express? Who are we and what do we do? DHL Express, we are truly global. We are in 220s and territories around the globe. We're the most international company in the world. And we're, as you know, we're quite proud of that. And what do? We deliver services and shipments internationally, time definite around the world. What does that mean? We might deliver we deliver documents from Hong Kong to Europe overnight. We deliver Formula One cars. We deliver organs. We deliver documents. We deliver vaccines. We deliver those things that need to go quickly around the world. This is what we do. And we do that through our network. And that network means we're very truly global because in order to make that happen, everybody everywhere in the world needs to work together. So that's something about DHL Express. We are part of the DHL group. We are 110,000 employees around the globe, which is part of the group, which is just under 600,000 employees around the world, which is an exciting place to be. We're everywhere. And how we run our business is we have local entities and hubs. So hubs, we have three main hubs around the world. We have our own fleet of airplanes. We have our own fleets of vehicles that help us do that. And as I said, the most important thing we have are our colleagues who are around the world supporting us and our customers. So that's around DHL Express.
Wow. And what is so special about the culture?
That's what we're always trying to find out. People always ask us, when we ask ourselves, what's the secret sauce? And you know, the CIS, something, if you think about what do I do at DHL, I'm in an area called CIS. People often think that's something to do with some countries and regions around the world. It stands for Certified International Specialist. And this defines very much who we are. Everybody in our organization, because of what we do, is an international specialist, and we're certified. That means everybody in the organization is given the knowledge, tools, mindset, and behaviors as a structure to support them in doing their job. And then we do that together. And that's where our culture comes in, because it's all about the culture. It's all about how we work together. And this culture that we have, cultivate it, we share it, we spread it. This is what's important to us. It's really that one thing that every single employee around the globe, when they come on board, they have an onboarding, they have the opportunity to learn about our company. We run programs. We translate them into 46 languages. We make sure our supervisors and managers also have specific training so they can bring the culture and the experience that we promise to life. That is given to our supervisors, who are our main focus, to our front line, which is extremely important for us because our front line meets our customers every day. There are those opportunities there in DHL. So, and our culture is that your supervisors and your managers bring that culture to life. So we also engage with them to make sure they have the training and the experience and the opportunities to make that happen. Our supervisory program, we only translate that into 24 languages, but it's still quite a lot because we want our programs to be inclusive, that everyone has the opportunity. The other thing which is important, I think, share about our culture is that it's all about respect and results. And this is how those two things go hand in hand. They go together. It's how we live, how we work as one across that globe. And that's what we hold ourselves accountable for, and to the standard, and support each other. And this is something interesting about our culture. And maybe I can say, Carson, before I joined DHL Express, I worked for another company, I think, as you know, and I went to a conference, and I saw somebody at this conference share something about how they have a respect and results culture, how they really truly focus on their supervisors as the key to unlocking motivated people across the globe. And I was like, who are these people? I'm fascinated by the story they told. How do they solve some of those challenges that many in big organizations have in spreading their culture, but also engaging with their people? And I thought, gosh, they're the ones to watch. And then they gave me a call and they said, hey, we saw your profile. Somebody met you. Would you like to come and join us? And I said, you bet I do. I want to be part of that. And that's how I came to be in DHL Express, but also because that culture and because that drive to respect and results, focus on the front line, focus on supervisors, focus on things that are important. That's really something about us. Yeah.
And what impressed me is also your team members, where they come from. Can you run us through the countries they come from?
Yeah, this is also something that I love, right? So what countries do we have? The US, that's me. Uruguay, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, Russia, Serbia, the UK, Romania, Australia, Belgium, Guatemala, Ecuador. Have I missed anybody? Now I'm thinking, have I missed anybody? I don't think so.
Okay. Well, so this is really like the UN almost, right? So all countries are kind of represented.
Yeah.
And territories. I mean, what is special about that if you compare that to other? I mean, you've always worked in international environments, but what is special about this team, about this mix?
You know, what really makes it special is the different perspectives. That could be from which holidays we celebrate in the team. It could be people's knowledge about what is it like to be somewhere different. It helps us to talk about things in a whole new way. Is that going to fit? Is it going to help? Are there different people? We also have a mix of generations in the team. So some people who are younger, some people who have been in organizations longer. So there's just a wide variety, and that really makes it fun because people will say things and share things you've never expected. And in fact, if nobody does, we're kind of all disappointed. It's kind of like we should move in the same direction, but we shouldn't just agree unanimously about everything. There's some spice to it when you have people from different countries and backgrounds. And of course, the jokes are fantastic because you know, just say one word and it means something else in a different language or a different region. We do have a lot of fun in that regard.
Oh, that's great. And so this specialist program, Certified International Specialist, there's a background to it, isn't there, right? So that means that you provide the professional training that involves, I guess, hard skills, but also soft skills, for people that join DHL Express. So in other terms, almost everybody with the right mindset and attitude can join DHL, and then there's education provided to them. Is that right?
Yeah, this exactly. And I think this is really exciting, which is if you want to join us, you can. We will give you the knowledge, skills, and tool sets and support you to know how to do it in an organization. And that is just as much true for people, for everybody joining. Who are we? What do we do? And how can you help across our functions? So if you want to work on the ramp, join us. We'll show you how to do it. It also means if you want to work in IT, come and join us. And there are products and opportunities for you to join there as well. So really across all those different areas, opportunities. And the same thing, which I think is quite unique, if you would like to move into a leadership position, if you would like to become a supervisor or a manager, hey, that's great. We have opportunities. We're going to help to develop and grow you. And that's really where my contribution comes in DHL Express. What I'm responsible for specifically within that program is all our manager programs, from our supervisors all the way to our leaders, because our management programs for our managers, everybody gets them. So the focus is not that a small few or some people at the top or some everybody. We want everybody to be part of it because it's part of our culture. And that's the exciting bit. And something we can be truly proud of. I think it's exciting. You know, I worked in a business school and I was surrounded by people in my past who all had PhDs and double PhDs and, all those things. And in DHL Express, we also have people with academic degrees. We also have a heck of a lot of people who have none, who do not have a university degree. And that's exciting. And that's at the highest levels of our organization. And that means there are opportunities by the experience that you get, the opportunities that we give, but also the training and the development opportunities that we share mean you can do it if you join us. We will help you. And you bring, of course, the right mindset and the right attitude with you. There are lots of people who are country managers today. When you think about a country manager, that's probably a multi-million dollar or multi-million euro business. Started out as a courier and made their way through the organization. So, you know, it's really, it's good fun and a good thing that excites me to work in DHL, because you do have that mix of background and people who just said, what about me? Why not me?
Okay. So it really sounds like the company has understood the value of attitude and mindset, and also the importance of frontline leadership to making a difference to the, you know, client satisfaction, customer experience, but also bottom line. I mean, it's you're not a charity, so there's a link to business results.
Yeah, and this is It all starts with motivated people. This is what we believe. This is part of our who we are, what we do, our strategy. It's embedded. It all starts with motivated people. And when you have those motivated people, this is what we truly believe and what we drive, then you give great quality of service. And if you give that great quality of service, you have loyal customers. And if you have loyal customers, you're going to have profitable growth. That's how we see it. We don't start from the, we want the, it's all about the money, and therefore we do something about it. We start motivated people, and the chain will move from there. And that's been, you know, part of the success story of the last 12 years.
And what are you working on right now, Craig? There are some big programs that you are helping to shape.
Yeah, what am I, it's a great question. What am I working on? I could look over here and see my list of all the things that I'm doing and trying to support other people. But what, I mean, one of them, two of the major things that I'm working on at the moment, one is a new program we call Making a Great Team Better, MAGTB. And this is a program for senior management teams who go through a 9-month journey as an intact team. And this is something exciting and quite new for us. To date, or in the, you know, in the last numbers of years, we've looked at the as leaders as individuals. How do you lead people in teams? But your development, really you as an individual, and what is your journey going to be together with other people? Now we're focusing on an intact team. What are the dynamics in that team? What is the vision of that team? And what's going to make them successful? And this is something that we spend a lot of time doing. Developing that program, because everything that we do, we develop internally, also with partners together, and we run those things internally with internal resources as well. And so getting that quite right. So this is very exciting for us. We piloted that in 7 countries, ran our first cohorts, another 12 around the globe in every region. And in 2024, we have another 24. So the great 24 and 24 starting. So this is what I'm really very much working on at the minute. I know I said before the call, I have someone pinging me. This is what somebody was pinging me about. So that's hugely, hugely important. And alongside that, we have our global master facilitators who support that. And I'm responsible for facilitation in our organization and bringing that forward. And the other big thing that I'm working on is our Manager Academy. We have a lot, and I've said some things about, you know, we focus on our supervisors and our frontline, and we do have a large program for them. We've discovered is we've left some people a little bit out of the equation. Managers have some support as well, but they don't have a full academy. And this is what we'd like to bring to them, and not do something random or new or different, but bring them in because it's about culture, give them access to more of the content, tools, and thought processes that we have available already in our supervisory, and how would you apply that to our managers? So bringing that together as an academy is another big thing that I'm working on this year with my team, which I'm probably obviously very, very excited about.
So it looks like that, I mean, you have the specialists, you have the supervisors, you have the managers, and you're focusing now on intact teams. That really sounds like a very holistic approach. Now, in many companies, leadership development and culture development is something that is, you know, popular when the numbers are good, but when the numbers turn bad, mm-hmm. That's kind of the first on the list, you know, of expenses to cut. How is DHL Express treating this?
I'm going to say we treat it differently. We think it's hugely important. The sponsor of CIS is every business leader, but also our management board and our CEO, who support us and drive these programs. This program, for example, that I mentioned, MAGTB, Making a Great Team Better, the core sponsor of that is our CEO, John Pearson. This is not done somewhere secretly in a, you know, there's not some secret department that does stuff under the it's all one thing. So that we see that very differently, and we have the full support and the engagement. The question is rather, why aren't we far enough? Why isn't it done? What is the, how, why do we only have 92% completion rate across some of our programs? Like, let's do this. Everybody needs access. So that's something. The other part of that story is the, how was even this program, this idea created? It's a turnaround story. 12, 13 years ago, DHL Express went through some very, very challenging times. And it was the time of to say, we're going to change our focus. We're going to focus on international. And therefore, we need to focus. If we're going to do that, we need to make sure everyone's a specialist. What will we do? How will we get them? How will we get there? And the start of CIS sees the turnaround and the growth of this organization. So for us, CIS, our culture and how we move that forward, it is that one thing that we hold on to that supports us in the best of times and also in challenging times.
Okay, so it's not just an add-on, it's really the key ingredient to
we live CIS, we live it, and that's what brings us together. It's a culture, it's about engagement, it's not a training program.
And I still recall you and your colleague on one of our conferences, and you radiated so much positive energy. There's also a lot of volunteering going on at DHL. What do you guys do there?
You know, we have what we call a wheel of purpose. We have a purpose, and that is connecting people and improving lives. And we really believe that. There's the opportunity because we are in so many markets that we can make an impact. And we have something which is called Volunteering Day. And there, everyone everywhere has the opportunity within their part of the organization to volunteer. There's a tremendous amount of volunteering that goes on sites and countries and locations and stations. They organize those things themselves. There are, if you have something that you would like to do, people promote that. I often join in some of the charity runs that take place for breast cancer. Oh, look here, breast cancer awareness. I'm very proud of that medal. So there are lots and lots of opportunities to do that. And we also have a program called DHL's Got Heart, which is basically we look to see what are people in the organization who can apply and say they're doing volunteering and charity work on their own beyond the scope of what the opportunities are inside the organization. We celebrate that. We vote for those things, and there is a donation made, and often quite big donations made to those charities, because we want to see that you have an impact outside of work, and we celebrate it. This is something important to us because we are such a big organization. We are in so many local markets. We're driving around. Our couriers are out and about. In cities, in country, in locations around the world, we're out there, and so there are lots of opportunities to do that, and we take that on board. We love it. We think it's fun.
That sounds really amazing, and this is almost too good to be true. So, is there something that you are struggling with as an organization? Is there something that you get critiqued for, or what's the other side? Is there another side?
Of course, there's always another side to that. I mean, for example, we have an insanely customer-centric culture, which means it's all about the customer and how do we bring that to life. And there are challenges. There are challenges to deliver to our customers each and every day. And this is why we have our culture, why we have systems and tools. But we do need to respond to those things. You know, there are geopolitical things happening in the world that directly impacts us. If we need to move a trade lane because something's happening in the world, if you want to bring something from Asia to Europe, the trade lane, I think, as we're all aware, has shifted around. And this causes our customers to engage with us in a different way, different timelines, et cetera. So there are lots of things that impact us in those ways. That's a daily challenge. That's not some... it's not something far off into the ethers. It's not something that doesn't affect us. It is each day, every day, weather impact us. So this is something that we really drive for, and that we have to have that continuous improvement mindset, because things will go wrong. We want to prevent them, but things go wrong, and how do we make that up, and how do we make that back? So that's a huge challenge for us. And it's a daily challenge that we have to overcome. Another challenge, which is, you know, we do a lot of thinking about that, is what is the impact on the environment of what we do? We have a zero emissions goal by 2050. And how are we going to get there? How do we partner with our customers in a way to make that happen? And this is also a struggle. We have a huge fleet. And that's being transitioned to electric, transitioned to bikes. We have the first electric fleet of airplanes in the US. We have a sustainable aviation fuel program, but it's not easy. It takes a lot to make that happen. A lot of effort, a lot of look into a lot of niche areas to say, you know, what role does packaging play? And what's our part in that? And what can we do? And how can we work with others together? There are big challenges out there for us. And, you know, it's, we don't shy away from it. So I'm sharing it. We don't shy away from it, but it's a daily challenge. It's not something that, you know, is something that we're not aware of. And if we're not aware of something, you know, let us know.
Yeah. And now I would like to understand more about Kate, the person. So DHL, I think we have a pretty good picture, DHL Express. Before that, you worked for Bombardier Transportation, which is a company that I had the honor to work for as well. We didn't do it in parallel, though. We were in different times there. And Bombardier Transportation no longer exists, so maybe we can ask that question. What's the biggest difference in terms of culture that you, if you were to compare Bombardier Transportation and DHL?
Ooh, what's the biggest difference? They are so different. It comes from what those companies do. It's both transportation and logistics. Bombardier was a project and engineering company, so looking at things in a far different way, a producer. DHL Express is services, which means we have different kinds of teams, a different reach. The structure is the biggest difference of how people work together. In Bombardier, people work in projects, big hierarchies, and that driving really the behaviors, the hierarchy driving the behavior. And in DHL Express, it's about respect and results, which is far different, also driven by the difference in what we do and who we are. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big thing. The other thing I would say, you know, for Bombardier, it's kind of funny that because Bombardier in itself still exists, that there's something interesting when you leave a place, you see the good, you also see the good things and the bad things. And I would say what is common is the great colleagues. I'm still in touch with some, look at us. We were never colleagues in the time, but Bombardier connects us. And I'm still in touch with a lot of colleagues who are either still there or in another company or other places. So this great collaboration with colleagues is that intimate feel because you've worked together. You've overcome things together. And maybe that's the big difference. In Bombardier, it was all about overcoming the challenges. That's what drew people together and keeps us connected. In DHL, it's about working together. We have something called As One. We do things together. Everyone's a part of it. Everybody matters. And that makes a huge difference. What do I prefer? I prefer DHL Express.
And Kate, you were born in the state of New York?
Yes, the great state of New York, Karsten, right. We say.
The great state of New York. And you were born into a family of teachers.
Yes.
And so tell us about that, please.
Yeah, sure. So I'm from the great state of New York, not the city, from Long Island, which, you know, that's a difference. And my I have three siblings. And my dad was a teacher, a math teacher, and also the founder of the local ambulance association. And worked in local politics as well. And my mom also was a teacher. She originally worked in tech in the 1960s as a woman, which is also very, very exciting to tell as a story, because I think it's important. Became a teacher, then she became a mother, and then she became a teacher again, and went back to school to study philosophy to get her master's. So something about her. And my siblings. Yeah, it's funny, right? We all work in the learning space. My brother, who is a musician, is also a teacher. My closest sister in age is also a teacher for English as a second language. And my other sister, who worked actually as a recruiter and in financial services for a while, has also landed in this space of leadership development coaching. She's a speaker and author. So we're learny types in the McCourt family.
And when you decided to study, you chose a location that is pretty far away from the great state of New York, North Carolina. What drove you to that?
Yeah, something about me is I like to move. I like to go. And so I wanted to get out, see something new, do something different, move away, maybe get a little bit more sunshine, which North Carolina can provide. So I moved. I was 17 when I went to college, and I sought to go somewhere different. I also sought to go somewhere that would give me a scholarship. So I'm a scholarship kid, which means I was also looking for a place that and opportunities to that someone else is going to pay for my education, which is something different. It's quite an American thing. You don't have that, for example, in all countries, but that was important for me. So I went to North Carolina, and this opened up, the window to say, gosh, people are different from me. In North Carolina, I think in my first day, they gave us a tour, and it was someone from the campus, and I barely understood a word the person said because of their accent. And I thought, wow, this is interesting. People thought my accent was funny because I was from New York and a lot of people from the South. So all this, the interculturality, is that a word? Started kind of right there. So I wanted to go places and do things, and look at me now, right? That was my first big step. And then I, from that experience, took the leap and went to Europe. And all these years later, I'm still here. I like to joke and say, my college roommate who studied German and had to do a semester abroad, I thought that's a fun idea. So I went with her, the big plan. Oh, that sounds cool. And we always joke that she left me here. She forgot me. She went back to the States. I'm still here.
You're still there. And history and politics is what you majored in. Why that?
Why not? I thought I was intrigued. It was interesting. I actually went to college and I was going to study math and IT. And I then was in some courses in history and politics. There's the, core liberal arts study program that you need to do. And I was fascinated by what I saw there. There were also really fun people. There was a mix of people. And then I went for it. I wanted to have a little bit more fun. Although in fairness, I will say, Karsten, I was really a very good math student. Maybe I should have stuck with the math, but later on, I went back to psychology and just some statistics, so I didn't lose all my number drive. But yeah, history and politics. I went to Wake Forest University, and that is a fantastic program. And I would say, in a way, the liberal arts education, I wouldn't trade it in for anything, because it helps you to discover new things, new fields, gives you methods, tools, and you can really analyze something. Very, very useful skill set.
And here is an interesting announcement for you. I've been talking about our Cosmic Foundation over the last month a lot. And now we have reached a very, very important milestone. We have identified an NGO in the Ukraine that we are going to support. The name is Future for Ukraine Foundation. I just met with their president, Elena Nikolayenko, in Warsaw over the weekend, and we agreed to work together. What they do is they work in three particular directions. One is to provide prosthetics for wounded soldiers, or generally people wounded during the war. They provide psychological counseling for women who experienced sexual violence, and also they support children with mental health issues. A very important work. 50 people are in the core team, and the Cosmic Foundation will provide them free access to high quality coaching. We have identified a growing pool of coaches in the Ukraine that speak Ukrainian, are certified according to the International Coaching Federation, which is the greatest or the largest professional body on the planet for coaches. And they are also able to speak English, which is, you know, if you put all of that together, it's very hard to find, but very, very happy to be able to start the work now. There's, you know, a lot of red tape that still needs to be worked through, but we'll make it happen. And now we need your support. The need for coaching is big, individual coaching, group coaching, leadership development, resilience development, all of that is needed. We can say already now that our budget will not be enough. So we don't have enough donations yet to support the work. We need your help. We need your support. So please support us, Cosmic Foundation. Website is www.cosmic-foundation.org, cosmic with C-O-S-M-I-K-K. Click donate now. And why is it important to donate there and not directly to the Future for Ukraine Foundation? If you give the money to the charity needs to use the money to fund prosthetics and, you know, counseling, social support and all of that. But what we want to do is we want to help the people in the NGO, and hence we need this money that is dedicated to coaching so that people can remain healthy and, you know, powerful, capable, resourceful. And this is why this is a good idea to understand this foundation. Okay, long story short, now back to the very, very fascinating talk with Kate McCourt. You are also connected to the history of a very important business school in Germany, namely ESMT. So first question is, how did you get there? How did that happen? Because they sit in Berlin. And what's the interesting part of that foundation story?
Yeah, so ESMT, I was living in Southern Germany, I was studying. I was also working as a trainer, moderator, and coach, and decided I need to do something different. I was going to go somewhere new. Berlin at that time, you know, over 20 years ago, was a super cool, it still is, but a super cool place to be. So I went there and I said, I'll do projects, I'll do things, I'll do whatever. And in those days, and I'm aging myself, I can't believe it, but in those days, you had to buy a newspaper in order to see the classified ads to see where they were jobs. So I saw an ad in the paper for an educational institution that wanted to grow itself. And it wasn't yet called ESMT, by the way. And the ad was a little bit like, can you do everything and nothing? Do you know something about international study? You know, and I thought, sure. I applied, you know, wrote a letter with my resume, typed it up somewhere and then sent it in. And weeks later, I got a call from someone. I was like, you know, who are you? What do you want from me? And it was this place. I went for an interview there and discovered what it was. I was interviewing for a role I didn't get, but they said, when talking to the managing director at that time and one of his colleagues, they said, we don't think you'd be good for this role. But what about this in our program area, developing with customers, and you think you could support us? And I said, sure. And that's how I started at ESMT. And in ESMT, we first, you know, we'd had an office somewhere near the Free University in Berlin. We were quite a small organization. We brought other predecessing organizations together, and out of that was created the ESMT. And that was really all about, you know, building it, not just the building, but building the, what are the programs? What do we do? How do we work with customers together? We won some first big clients, and then we grew and grew and grew from there. And the rest is history, or history in the making, right?
And talking about history, there is a lot of German history connected to ESMT, also largely because of the building that the business school is in. So what's the story about that?
The building that it's in is extremely exciting, actually. It's the former Staatsratsgebäude. What is that? That was the seat of the head of state of the GDR. So Honecker was in there. The building itself is fantastic. It was taken from a piece of that building that that was created for that is from the Imperial Palace, which at the time that I joined ESMT, at the end of the 90s or the beginning of the 2000s, that building was already long since demolished from the war. Another building, which was the Parliament building of the GDR, was sitting there. That was then demolished. It was decided to build the palace back. But the ESMT is created from a piece of that palace, that building. And for many, many years, it was the only memory of the Palace of the Republic, which has now been rebuilt in Berlin. So many, many people recognize that building, go to visit it, want to see it. The building itself has inspiring history inside of it. Who's been there? Who hasn't? It's now a building that you would have never gotten access to, that is open for studying, for free thought, moving quite in the area of capitalism, which is anathema to what that building was built for. So it's very, very exciting to be in that building and to see how people respond to it. Also, people from different places around the world. I know at the time when I was at ESMT, I was one of the things I ran a program called Doing Business in Germany, and we ran that with many entrepreneurs from China. And when you give a tour to those groups of people, the response you usually get to the facade and to how it's built and the impression it makes on you is very, very different. For the Chinese colleagues who came through, you show something which Europeans react very, or Americans might react to very, very emotionally. They go, yeah, it looks like ours. And they move on because the architecture would be similar in its mm-hmm. in its arrangement. So it's very fascinating, not only what happened in that building, but how people react and what it generates on conversations when people are in that building and see what it looks like now, what their lived experience is, and maybe the difference they see from then and now.
Yeah, that's really a fascinating story. And also, I think I remember a story around that building that, ESMT was given it for 1 euro or one
yes.
Deutschmark. Because it came at a cost, because all of it was bugged and there was all kinds of technology.
There were bugs in the wallpaper and the former maps and all the furniture and things hanging off it. I mean, in fairness, when the German government moved from Bonn to Berlin, there was a period of time when Schröder had his cabinet table inside that building, which is and that room is still there and all these kinds of things. But the renovations were extremely significant, changed, really, really updated, of course, with the technology. There's also a famous bunker in the cellar that was found during the renovations. I mean, there's so much in that. And also what is quite interesting, it used to be that building was connected to the B&D, what do you call that in English? The Central Intelligence Agency, yeah. I think you would call it, and connected there, which is now actually torn down and built anew in Berlin. But the tunnels underneath and connecting other buildings, quite interesting and exciting. And at that time, they needed to be closed off because it was a business school next to the Central Intelligence Agency. So maybe not such a good idea. And also quite enchanting is everybody who comes to the ESMT, for most people, they see the front building, this beautiful building with Meissen tiles and the renovations and all the technology. And then connected to that behind it is the administration building where our offices were. And that gives you more a flavor of what it would have been like to be living and working at that time, because that minimal renovations were taken on the part of the building. We used to call it the rabbit hutches, it's really small rooms, you can't open the window and so on. The colleagues, I think, are still working there today. I've been away for a while. It's a great environment, but the building itself in the back end, ooh, not as flashy as the front building.
And I mean, Kate, you left home, you left the States, came over, worked as a coach and facilitator in Germany. You picked up German along the way. I mean, we could do this podcast easily in German. Your level of German is close to perfection.
Yeah.
So how did you pick up? I mean, that's not the easiest language to learn.
That is correct, Carsten. It is not. I'm going to say you don't pick up German. And I would also venture to say, as a former language teacher, you don't just pick up anything. You have to practice. You have to try. So I studied German. I did it intensively. I also immersed myself, which means I spoke only German with people. It's quite interesting. My husband, who I met a long, long time ago, we met in German and we speak German to each other. So lots of people who I know, I only speak German to them. That's how you learn a language. I wouldn't say you pick it up. You have to you immerse yourself. And maybe as you can tell, it was challenging, but the challenge of needing to talk wasn't a challenge because I thought I love to talk. I love to meet new people and learn about them. And so if I wanted to do that, I was going to have to learn the language. And that's how I learned German.
That's pretty amazing. And so from, you know, from ESMT, you went to Bombardier. You spent a lot of time at Bombardier Transportation. Mm-hmm. And you also studied again.
Yeah. Yeah. So the, you know, the time I spent as well in the ESMT certainly inspired me. I got to work with some colleagues, someone who I looked up to and had the great opportunity to work with at that time, many people, but I worked together with Konstantin Korotov and I worked together with Andreas Bernhard. And in this area of leadership development, it really intrigued me about how people work together and also how your behaviors and how a company structures who works with whom has a huge impact on the results. And I worked in the area of leadership development and learning and development. And I wanted to, let's say, solidify and explore that further. And so I studied organizational industrial psychology on the side, as they say. And I did it, let's say, on my own, which means I did it in a way that allowed me to really choose how I was going to do it, when I was going to do it, who I would work with, and also what the topic of my master's thesis was. So quite, I had the support, but the independence to say, this is something I'm going to do for me, myself, and I. So I'm quite proud of that degree because it was something that was very much on my own. I didn't need, I needed my help and the support of people, but I could do that myself.
And what fascinates me about that is that you very much created who you are today. I mean, where you live, what you do, what's your identity. I mean, and you took more risks than usual people, average people, I would say. I mean, call me wrong, but that would be my reflection on this. Maybe it's because I've never managed to live in another country, immerse myself into a different culture, right? So this is something that I have tons of respect for. What do you think there is to learn from your biography? What if you know, some people would listen to this and say, I find this inspiring. What do you think can people learn from, you know, the way you approach life?
I would say, I think you can shape your life. You can shape what it's going to be. You don't need to follow a standard path that you read somewhere someone said you need to have. You can, when opportunities arise, you can take them and you can make the most of them. And I, you know, there were situations in my life that actually caused that. A very foundational one, of course, is my parents helped me to believe I could do and be anything if I put my mind to it. I needed to put my talents to good work to make that happen. So that's something which is inside of me. The second thing would be the fun is in the going, which means you need to enjoy those opportunities. It's not the end. You're always somehow in the middle. And something big that certainly significantly shaped my life is when I was a very quite young adult, my parents died, both separately, quite in succession. And this made me realize I must stand on my own two feet. at quite a young age, that there is no safety net, that I'm going to have to do this. There are people who can support me. I have family and siblings, etc. But it really is just me. And that, you know, it could sound like a weepy story, but in fact, somehow it's not, because I was able to do that. I could take one step forward. And each step I took made me think, gosh, I should have set myself higher goals. There's more than I can do. If you want to do something, you know, sometimes people ask me, how did you get to Germany? I said, I called a travel agency, I booked a flight, I packed a bag, and I went. And in essence, it really is that simple. There are some things you have to take care of in order to make that happen, but it's that simple. I've traveled on my own with others, but also on my own to many, many countries in the world and gone hiking. I've been, you know, in a variety of countries and had some crazy experiences. And how did I get there? I just decided I wanted to do it. And then things happen from there. If you put your mind to something and use your resources, and if you work hard, I think if you work hard, you got to put the work in. And that work could also be in the relationship that you have, or in the resource that goes into finding out, how do I make this happen? If you do those things, almost anything is possible. And maybe the final thing I would say is, work together and trust other people. If I think about what has shaped my life to this point, I've always met people along the way who gave me something or gave me an idea or who believed in me. It could be someone who gave me, you know, something from their lunch on a hiking trip, which made me then move forward. It could be someone who said, there's an opportunity over here. Do you want to work on that? Or someone who said, I'm going to give you some feedback, and gave me some serious feedback that actually helped me when I took it on board to say, oh, I need to ask more questions and talk less. So I think you can shape what your life's going to look like. It's never over. You're always in the middle, and use the resources around you, and the resources around you can also be you. That's what I would say.
Pretty cool. In your background, for those who are listen audio only, there's a bookshelf. And in this bookshelf, there's one particular book standing out because it's, you know, cover facing the camera.
Oh.
And this is Breaking Trail. So what's the significance of that book?
Oh, I love this book. It's by Arlene Blum, if anybody knows her. And she is famous in the climbing world. In particular, famous as a woman in the climbing world, being part of the first all-women teams to attempt to climb Everest, and also Annapurna, and shares in a fabulous experience from Annapurna. I've been to Annapurna, and I've been climbing there. My sister's been to Annapurna and climbing there, and I know a bunch of people who've done that, and I think the breaking trail as the topic. I mean, it's something I've come back to fairly recently. That's why it's there. I didn't actually mean to put it in the picture. Is something that connects me to other people that I know. But also, it's about you can do things differently. And this I find very inspiring. You can do things differently. You can fail. You can rough it up, and you can come back from that. So gosh, it's like a podcast on books. I highly recommend this and other books, but, Arlene Blum, wow. Look it up. Be inspired.
Cool. Role models. So, I think your parents qualify as role models. If yes. I listen to you correctly, probably Konstantin Korotov and Andreas Bernhard, as you mentioned.
Yes.
Other role models along the way?
So I'm going to say so many. Sometimes I think we look at role models and we think we need to hold up the big person, the big thing. And I do have those people in my lives. Many people who are role models of kindness, from my grandmother, who is extremely generous and a kind person. Whenever I think of myself, you know, why I channel her to say, I must be kinder to myself and to others. So that's another role model. But I think they're everyday role models. If I see someone who holds the door for someone else, I think, wow, that's something I want to model. That's the role I want to take. If I look at leaders in organizations, I like to pick and see and watch what they do and pick those elements and try to emulate that. I also have some negative role models, meaning those are people who I've learned, my goodness, I never want to be like this person. And I call upon those examples of managers I've had in my own lived experience where I think I never want to be like that. Or I remember how somebody made me feel in a negative way. And I think I'm never going to make anybody feel that way. And then I look to the people who've made me feel that I could do something, be something, I'm better than myself, and I want to emulate them. So I'm not a person who would say it's the one person, it's the one thing. I've had many people along my way, but also continue to look out for those things that you think, oh, not me, not today. But especially the time, it's the small things and the small moments that you see, the how people celebrate each other. Or you see young people coming up in organizations and they're always better. They're always better than you think they're going to be. And it's like, gosh, I need to be better. I need to be thinking in different ways. I need to take the initiative, raise my voice, have courage. So there are role models everywhere. You just need to pick and choose and see and use them.
Well, best time, worst time. So what was one of your best times in your life and why? And what was some of your worst days in your life and why?
Whew. I've had so many fantastic days. You really make it difficult, Karsten, to choose. I'm going to say one of the best days I've had fairly recently is I've been to a graduation of our supervisory program. And this is something I love to do. We invest a lot in our supervisors. They have modules, they have a program, they've experienced what they need to do. And then we have a graduation. And this graduation culminates in a regional graduation. We graduated back to back over 300 supervisors this year. And those supervisors come from all walks of life. And when they walk across that stage, this is why I do what I do, because many of those people, this is one of the biggest achievements they've had. Many people do not have a diploma or a degree, or if they do have one, maybe their family wasn't so involved. Maybe they had nobody cheering for them. And that's something that we can do. This best day is really about celebrating other people and the impact that you can have with things that you do. That is a very recent, and unfortunately, I get more opportunity than just the one per year to do that kind of thing. But that is really a highlight moment, because then you can see this is why all that effort was worthwhile. This is what I'm about. So that is maybe something which is the best. And I could tell you tons and tons, the places I've been, the people I've met, some worst moments I might also generate from that. I'm going to say one of the worst moments that I've had is I was sitting in the back of a police car in China, in Beijing, when I arrived once, traveling by myself. I didn't know what's going on. I thought I was being arrested in China at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was very, very frightened. It turned out to be a great experience, of course. It wouldn't be a Kate McCourt moment if it weren't. Sorry. The police officer was helping me and took me where I wanted to go. But for a moment there, I thought, oh, Kate McCourt, your luck has run out with your adventures. I'm going to say that would probably be something which is the worst. But I would say, maybe to summarize, I look for those opportunities to enjoy the moment. Life is short. My parents, passed away at a relatively young age. Life is short. Do what you want to do. Make things happen now. and enjoy what you're doing. So I look for those best moments also in a work environment. Work with the people that you like to work with. And if you don't like it so much, see if you can change it. What can I do to have more fun, to connect, to work in interesting projects? And if it's not going to happen, get out of there. Do something different, make it happen. The power's within myself. And the same thing for worst moments. Some of those bad moments either haven't been so bad or were huge learning experiences after them, or drove me to do something different, or drove me to say, I'm never going to be that way. Or I'm going to say, not on my watch. I have seen things take place and known in challenging situations with bullying and harassment, for example, in the workplace. Not on my watch, Karsten. I'm going to step in, step up, get support from others. There's always something you can do.
Well, Kate, there's a lot of positivity when I listen to you. When you switch on the news, how do you remain positive, or what's your outlook on the world right now?
You know, Karsten, I don't know if you remain positive. Sometimes I think, I might turn on my phone and talk to my phone, like, would you people come on? You know, this is, I am really a person who say, I think love is the answer in work, in life, in politics, you know, love is the answer. I don't see some of that love lately, but then you do. If you look at the response of people around the world to the support that they're given, this is what I try to tie myself to and to be part of that. You see someone do something, attack people, engage in conflict, and you see the propensity for other people to help. You see how people want to step in. You see how people, with their resources, not just writing a comment online, doctors go in. I know neighbors and friends who have taken in people from countries who are refugees in the interim period when they were looking for something. I've seen large donations. I've made large donations myself. I've gotten involved in things. I think there's always this way forward, but it doesn't, you know, sometimes I watch the news and I think, really, again, have people learned nothing? But I think it's, how to stay positive is to focus on, where are people doing good? How can I support? Who's not on the news? You know, if you look into the news, they want to also report things that are going to catch your eye, which is the most spectacular. They're not actually capturing the everyday. And in the everyday, you, me, we can all make a difference. If you think about what I do in my job and my workplace, I help other people have their best day. And if you have your best day, that means you're going to go home to your family and your friends and your dog and your community. You're going to go home safe. You're going to go home happy. And you're going to help other people have their best day every day by chance and maybe on purpose. And that spreads. So this is how I stay positive, because otherwise, you know, don't read it, don't watch it, which also isn't the way, or that's not gonna get me, I don't think, any other people anywhere. So it really is about looking for the goodness and getting involved locally where I can.
Love is the answer. What's your outlook on the US election?
Whew. That is my outlook. You know, this is also something I see in the news and I think, oh my goodness, here we go. The US election is fascinating, but I would also say it's not done until it's done. Lots of things happen in the buildup, lots of things happen in the primaries. What I find disappointing, I think, is that some of the learnings each election cycle come out, what have we focused on? Who has been most prominent in the news? And whoever is most prominent in the news and most talked about tends to be successful on the ballot. So if you would like, and if we would like different candidates than might be out there. We need to talk about them. We need to search for them. We need to look for them. This is a little bit short notice. I might even be in the US election, but if we would like to see something different, we're going to have to do something about it. And by the way, that's my same view in organizations. If we would like to see different leadership in the future, if we would like to see more diversity, then we're going to have to work on it now. Who are we talking about? Who are we supporting? Who are we developing? Where are we shining the light? That is very, very true for an organization. And it's the same thing in politics, whether that's the US politics or elsewhere. So I'm at the moment, I think it's not over yet. And I'm also thinking, my gosh, everybody, what's our part in all of this?
Yeah. Well, we'll see, I guess. So, Kate, thank you for this grand tour through your life. What's the one thing I haven't asked you yet, Kate, that would be interesting to our listeners and viewers?
I love this question. And I knew you were going to ask it. And I've just been thinking, what the heck am I going to say? What have you not asked me? Maybe what you haven't asked me is, what do I do about my health and well-being?
Okay.
And I think this is something that is hugely important, not because it's on the news, but it's in things that we read all the time. It's because it's important to me. I think the health and well-being is something where I cannot put enough focus on that enough. And it is, I get a lot of energy when I talk with other people and when I spend more time with family and friends. This is something hugely important. But also making the time to sleep enough, to eat the right food, and to exercise. And these are things I always want to do more of. And what I know about myself is that when I don't do them, I don't feel as good. I'm not as productive. I don't feel as positive. And when I do them, wow, people might even ask, what do you want? I'm like, I'm feeling good because I'm doing good for myself. And I think this is, it's a reminder. And I reminded myself again at the beginning of the year, I must do more in my health and well-being. And that starts with a lot of things. But no time like the present to get back on track.
That's a great closure, I think, for our talk. Thank you so much, Kate. I'm very inspired by your talk. I'll have a different remainder of the day now. So thank you for that. And all the best to you.
I'm glad. Thanks a lot, Karsten.
That was Kate McCord. What do you think? What are your reflections? What inspires you? Send us an email at leaderstalk@leadership-choices.com or leave us a comment and a rating if you want to. That would be really, really nice. And now, thank you for listening. Stay healthy and see you here or hear you here in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.